You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
You may feel like our system has no justice, but there will be justice on this fine program. Welcome, everybody. Happy Monday afternoon. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We got a really great guest lined up for you this hour. I am joined by Luke Baumgartner. He is a research fellow at George Washington University specializing in extremism. This guy knows what he's talking about. So we are going to convene that discussion with Luke and each and every one of you. But first, some breaking news. Jimmy Kimmel's back, I'm sure much to the chagrin of Donald Trump. ABC said on Monday that Jimmy Kimmel Live would return to its airwaves tomorrow, ending an impasse that began last week. In a statement, they said this, quote, "Last Wednesday, we made the decision to suspend production on the show to avoid further inflaming a tense situation at an emotional moment for our country. It is a decision we made because we felt some of the comments were ill-timed and thus insensitive. We have spent the last days having thoughtful conversations with Jimmy, and after those conversations, we reached the decision to return the show on Tuesday." Fascinating. We'll see what happens next. Again, his suspension occurred after current FCC chairman Brendan Carr went on a number of programs and basically said that ABC affiliates should refuse to show the program, said they'd be looking at FCC licenses for ABC and its affiliates, basically threatening ABC, and the suspension occurred. So watch this space. We'll see what comes next. In a similar fit of fury, Wisconsin Congressman Derek Van Orten is doubling down today on his threat to remove all funding, all federal funding from the Mayo Clinic over an employee's social media post. An employee in Mayo Clinic's HR department posted this, honoring a lifelong divisive white racist, sexist, homophobe, anti-Semite bigot with military honors under the guise of a model, quote, Christian, priceless. Derek Van Orten then posted that post and said this last week, "We will be working to remove every single penny of federal funding from the Mayo Clinic unless this is resolved." So much for those free speech warriors on the right. Interestingly enough, the Mayo Clinic, of course, receives, as you would expect, substantial amounts of federal grant funding. This funding helps fund cancer treatment, cardiovascular disease, aging, and other healthcare research, including 28 healthcare facilities in Van Orten's 3rd congressional district in Wisconsin, including in La Crosse, Eau Claire, Holman, and Sparta, along with many in rural areas. When asked if this funding should be removed because somebody at Mayo said something he didn't agree with, Mr. Van Orten got pretty defensive and just doubled down on his pledge to remove all that funding and falsely claimed that the organization itself is, quote, inciting violence. When the constituent he was talking with pushed back and said that he hadn't seen the organization itself say anything disparaging about the Kirk assassination, Van Orten then told the caller on the show that he was on to, quote, open his aperture and that not all speech is protected. That's weird. Anyways, getting right into it, in the midst of all of this extremism and this back and forth about what free speech is, what's hate speech, what is extremism, we've got our great guest today. Luke Baumgartner is a research fellow at the Program on Extremism at George Washington University. His research includes research into domestic violent extremism, white supremacist movements, and the role of military veterans in political violence. He himself is a military veteran. After receiving his Bachelor of Arts from Southern Illinois University at Carbondale, he was commissioned in the U.S. Army, where he served as an active duty field artillery officer for 4 years and then was honorably discharged. He enrolled in Georgetown University's Security Studies program, where he's got his master's from, and he's here with us today. Thank you for spending some time with us, Luke. I want to jump in, because it seems like there are competing definitions of hate speech and extremism, and that we don't have a shared understanding of what that is. So I just want to start, as a researcher in this area, what defines extremism, specifically domestic extremism, here in the United States?
Well, Maggie, first, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate the opportunity. So to answer your question, it's tricky because, you know, in the U.S., we don't have a strict, you know, codification of what hate speech is, what extremism is within U.S. code. Now, I'm not an attorney, so I couldn't give you the ins and outs of the specifics, but, you know, generally how we understand extremism also varies depending on who you ask and how many people are in the field at any given time. Also depends on how many definitions you'll get. But typically what we think of when we have political ideologies, left, right, center, anywhere on that spectrum, typically when somebody is, you know, a certain number of standard deviations away from the mean is what we kind of look at when we want to take a real good look at defining extremism. So that can be left-wing extremism, that can be right-wing extremism. There are some even extremist centrists, believe it or not, that that is a thing, albeit very small. And there's, you know, Islamist extremism, Christian nationalism. There's, you know, extreme Zionist movements as well. So no ideology, no religion, no political persuasion is necessarily immune from extremism. And
let's one just thing emphasize I w- yeah. that point. No ideology or political persuasion or religion is free of extremism. It exists on all sides. So let's start there, because I wanted to, and I interrupted you, Luke. Please continue your thought, my friend.
So, you know, when we look at how we what we think of as extremism, it's also important to differentiate between somebody becoming radicalized to becoming extreme within their, you know, specific religion, ideology, or political affiliation. And another big separator between that is how does somebody get mobilized to actually commit an act of violence or take any other acts in furtherance of their goals? So there's a difference there.
So someone could have extreme views or express something that someone else considers to be extreme. For example, on social media, I read what this gentleman had posted that's got some folks up in arms. But that is different from being radicalized. And then you used another word, like actually taking action. What was the specific term you used, Luke? Radicalized and then...
Mobilized.
Mobilized. Those are different things. When we're talking about extremism, it can include radicalization and mobilization, but it doesn't necessarily have to. We can talk about extreme speech sort of in its own category. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, and you can be an extremist without being violent. You know, typically what we consider a terrorist is somebody who then takes that leap from becoming an extremist, a nonviolent extremist, to a violent extremist. You know, they take that step from merely being radicalized to becoming mobilized to violence.
Folks, if you're just joining us, we've got Luke Baumgartner. He's a research fellow at George Washington University at the Program on Extremism. You've got questions or comments, 855-752-4842. And you're also not going to want to go anywhere. I'm about to drop that word for Civic Media's Go for the Green and Gold Text to Win contest. That's coming up for in just a couple minutes. So when we look at violent extremism, and I want to focus there because that, I think, you know, at least from a rhetorical perspective, folks on the right and the left are trying to condemn violent extremism. So when we look at whether it's a statistical analysis of violent extremist acts, whether driven by political ideology, religious ideology, whatever it may be, in the United States, is there a pattern to violent extremist actions that we've been seeing? Do they occur more on the right, more on the left? Are we seeing an increase in violent extremism? Where are we at just in terms of the incidence of these violent extremist acts?
So before I answer your question, let's take a broad view of the history of violent extremism throughout U.S. history, very briefly. What we would probably consider the first violent extremist organization or group in the U.S. would probably very likely be the Ku Klux Klan in its subsequent iterations. So that would probably be the first American terrorist organization. And ostensibly, they were heavily right-wing. The U.S. didn't exactly have a bifurcated left and right at that point in history. You know, our terminology of left and right comes from which side of the parliament people sat on during the French Revolution. So we didn't exactly have a one-to-one comparison to that within the U.S. Now, there's been waves, there's been ebbs and flows of extremist violence in the U.S. For instance, you know, in the 60s, there was a rash of right-wing violence in opposition to civil rights movement. You had organized neo-Nazi groups, the second or the third iteration of the Klan, and various other right-wing groups like the citizens councils and everything like that come up in opposition to MLK and all the other civil rights leaders. And then in the 70s, you saw a, you know, pretty sizable increase in left-wing violence. And that's when a lot of ethno-nationalist movements across the world basically took up left-wing causes or had a left-wing veneer to them. And Americans found that pretty appealing to them. So they sympathized and joined in some of their struggles. And ever since, you know, the late 80s, early 90s, what we've seen is a pretty clear demarcation between left and right violent extremism. And it's been overwhelmingly coming from the right wing. You know, for the program that I work at GW, we've primarily tracked extremist violence since 2014, 2015-ish when we were founded. So we have, you know, over a 10-year time period. We have a pretty large sample size. We have nearly, you know, 900 extremist defenders that are of the Islamist or jihadist persuasion. And for our domestic violent extremist offenders, we have close to 600 in the 570-ish range last time I checked. And I did an interview for another publication, and what I found was, in a quick, you know, analysis, more than 430 about were of a right-wing persuasion, what, you know, DHS, FBI would traditionally classify as right-wing, whether it's racially or ethnically motivated or anti-government or militia related. So long story short, you know, the far right has pretty much a monopoly over the last 10, 12 years on extremist violence in the U.S.
Folks, that's Luke Baumgartner. To not miss the point, the right wing has a monopoly, a near monopoly, on extremist violence in this country over the last 10 or so years. We're going to continue this discussion on the other side. Your questions and comments are welcome. 855-752-4842. We're going to talk the great replacement theory. Is Antifa an extremist organization? Is it even an organization? We're going to get into all of that and so much more. So do not go anywhere. And the first thing I'm going to do when I come back is drop that word to win for Go for the Green and Gold Multi-State Text to Win Context. Next, here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network, and it is the first day of Civic Media's Go for the Green and Gold Text to Win contest across Wisconsin and beyond, our first multi-state contest. Listen, by texting in the word via the app, and again, you got to go get that, the Civic Media app from wherever you get your apps from. It is free. You're going to text the word I'm about to drop on you, and that will enter you to win daily prizes, which include both $200 in cash and gold jewelry, as well as a grand prize, which is two club-level indoor seats to Green Bay versus Minnesota on November 23rd, 2025 at 12 p.m. Yeah, folks, it can be real cold, so those club-level tickets are a good thing to have, plus a gas card to get you to the game, all worth about $1,500. If you want to kick your fall off right, you're going to do it right now by texting the word WIDE, W-I-D-E. That is WIDE, W-I-D-E, as in you got to have a good wide receiver when you're playing in the NFL. Folks, good luck and happy hunting. Again, that word is wide, W-I-D-E. Tune in every day in the 5 o'clock hour, as well as, let's see, the 7 a.m. hour, 9 a.m., 11, 1 p.m., 3 p.m., 5 p.m., and 7 p.m. hour for your chances to win unique words every day at each of those individual hours. This hour, we've got a great guest. His name is Luke Baumgartner. He is a veteran, and he is currently a research fellow at the Program on Extremism at George Washington University. That is a nonpartisan program, and their research looks at domestic violent extremism, white supremacist movements, and the role of military veterans in political violence. Let's take a couple callers before we dig in to Luke's most recent paper, one of his recent papers on the great replacement theory and the lie that that is. Jack from Merrimack, say hello to Luke. What's your question or comment this afternoon, sir?
My apologies. I kind of called in a little bit late for this comment, but I wanted to point out the credibility issue is this is something that if the Chinese or the North Koreans or the Russians had hired someone to absolutely wreck the United States of America, they couldn't have done a much better job. What we're seeing is the abrogation of international treaties, the backing away from our partners in commerce, the continual destabilization of our monetary system, and threats to even make that more extreme, the destruction of government services by firing thousands and thousands of people whose jobs were to actually help people. I mean, I don't know as America will ever recover from this one.
Thanks so much, Jack. For folks who may just be joining us and for my guests, context, for the first hour, I spoke with Professor Howard Schwaber of the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and we talked about the move away from objective science, independent agencies, objective data analysis, and good transparent data reporting from the federal government to the American people, to researchers like yourself. And I'll just say this to link these two topics together. It is helpful when we're having a political debate to be grounded in the same reality, to share some facts, to agree, hopefully, on the results that we want to see. Maybe we disagree about the how, but if we agree about the results that we want to see, that's great. But we hold government accountable through data analysis, through scientific research. We can see what works and what doesn't. And if we move away from facts and independent agencies and good research and good data collection and good data analysis, then we're sort of in this post-truth environment where rhetoric takes the place of facts. And when that is true, it would seem to me that extremism is more likely to take hold than when we're all arguing from the same set of facts. Folks, if you're on the line, stay there. I wanna get back to the phones in just a minute. But Luke, you've been very patient. Thank you, sir. Just what are your thoughts on that before we get into the great replacement theory, which is kind of an example, a little bit of what I'm talking about. You make something up. If federal agencies are deprived of the data or the freedom to independently analyze these things, if researchers like yourselves can no longer rely on data, that does sort of prime the pump and create an environment where extremism and radicalization may be more likely than if we had those shared facts.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. For folks in my field, it's been especially damaging because we've lost tens of millions of dollars in grant money to study this. And that grant money goes to us studying and trying to find the root causes of violent extremism in the U.S. and effective ways to counter it. That money goes towards hardening what we traditionally call soft targets, like schools, mosques, synagogues, churches, that sort of thing. And a lot of that money funded really good research. If you look at some of the research that came out of the University of Maryland, they did, a lot of really good work on the trends in violent extremism in the U.S. across all types of, political and religious ideologies that inspire those sorts of acts. So a lot of us are really kind of hamstrung, especially the programs and, you know, the universities that had centers that were funded by DHS and FEMA money. We don't have access to that anymore. And so what that does, it leaves room for, you know, nefarious actors to come in and try and paint a picture that just frankly is untrue, not even inaccurate. It's just factually false. And, you know, you can twist numbers any way you want to say whatever you want.
Yeah, it's a dangerous time when the folks that are dedicating their lives to good, objective, nonpartisan research about violent extremism are getting defunded by a government who claims to want to curb violent extremism. Make it make sense. We're going to try on the other side with each and every one of you. We got Ali on the phones, Cam and Mark, and you are going to be with us on the other side with Luke Baumgartner, a research fellow at the Program on Extremism at George Washington University, a veteran himself. We'll explore those relationships and the Great Replacement Theory next. Don't go anywhere. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Well, it is day one of Civic Media's Go for the Green and Gold Text to Win contest, not just in Wisconsin, but now multi-state Text to Win contest test. You're going to need the Civic Media app, which you can get for free wherever you get your apps from. Just search for Civic Media, download that puppy, and then text in this word that I'm about to drop to enter to win daily prizes, including $200 in cash and gold jewelry, and one grand prize, including two club-level indoor seats to Green Bay versus Minnesota, a home game on November 23rd at 2025 this year at noon, plus a gas card to get you to the game, a $1,500 value. The word to win and get entered this hour is WIDE, W-I-D-E, as in the Green Bay Packers have wide appeal. I call it America's team. It ain't the Cowboys. It's the Packers. Let's be honest. Nobody really likes Jerry Jones. I digress. Got to bring you a little bit more breaking news before we go back to our fine guest this half hour. There are two infant deaths that have been linked to whooping cough in Louisiana. State leaders describe it as the worst whooping cough outbreak in the past 30 years. Parents in that state are now stunned to learn of more than 360 confirmed cases of the infection. That news breaking on the same day that Donald Trump, basically in a rambling, nonsensical, I don't know, stream of consciousness, completely devoid of any scientific reality or proof or even reference to reliable studies that were published in peer-reviewed journals, has now said to people, don't take Tylenol repeatedly today. That, of course, coming on top of the CDC's vaccine panel, jimmying with the childhood vaccine schedule, limiting the availability of COVID-19 vaccines. Such a mess. Those meetings last Thursday and Friday I discussed and played a little bit of sound of in our first hour. It sounded like people that had no idea what their actual job is. I'm just saying, my opinion. Didn't know how to run the meeting, didn't know how to make motions clearly. People didn't know what they were voting on. People talked about anecdotes. Anecdotes don't make public health policy. If you missed any of that discussion with Professor Schwaber, check it out. It will be available after this program ends at 6 o'clock, wherever you get your podcast from. But right now, I've got a great guest. His name is Luke Baumgartner. A research fellow at George Washington University's Program on Extremism. They research domestic violence, extremism, white supremacist movements, and the role of military veterans in political violence. He himself is a veteran. Luke, thanks for sticking around with all of us. And folks, you want to get in on this conversation, 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. Luke, we were talking before the break a little bit about the idea that there are facts and researchers like yourselves at apolitical, completely nonpartisan, university-based research agencies have been looking at extremism. We talked about in the first hour that the National Institutes of Justice scrubbed a study from their website last week because it frankly contradicted the claims that many in the MAGA regime or movement were making that the violence and the violent extremism is coming from the left. Professors from the University of Maryland Specifically, Professor Gary LaFree has studied this for quite a long time. You actually interned with the Department of Criminology and Criminal Justice, their National Consortium for the Study of Terrorism and Responses to Terrorism. He has done a lot of research here. He's concluded that their analysis shows that right-wing actors are significantly more violent than left-wing actors. There's research from the Cato Institute showing that. There's research from the Anti-Defamation League. And your research, sir, from George Washington University has also shown that there is much more violent extremism separate from rhetoric, actual violent extremist acts coming from the far right. One of the talking points of guys like both Charlie Kirk and Tucker Carlson, but that you frequently hear either called out by name or described, is this concept called the Great Replacement Theory, which basically tells white people you're being eliminated. If you can define it, and you recently wrote a paper about this, we'll put the link to that paper in our show notes for today. What is the Great Replacement Theory, and why did you study it since you are a researcher into domestic violent extremism?
So, real briefly and succinctly, the Great Replacement Theory is a racist, anti-Semitic conspiracy theory that posits that there is some sort of grand cabal of liberal elites across the world, which is typically a dog whistle for Jews, and there that the cabal exists to essentially eliminate the white race. And that is, when you get down to brass tacks, that's what the conspiracy is. And they do this through a number of mechanisms. They purposely contort world capitalism, financial systems to, purposely discriminate against white people, or they allow increased numbers of non-white immigrants into traditionally white homelands, quote unquote, the U.S., Europe, those sorts of places. They encourage interracial marriage and having interracial kids, thereby diluting the total number of white Europeans that are available to produce white European children. So essentially it is this conspiracy of eliminationism.
And we see glimpses of this in policy discourse today from the Trump administration. There's a very heavy pro-natalist movement, and that is one of the offshoots that you just mentioned, or manifestations of the Great Replacement Theory, which is, ladies, you are to stay home, be subservient to your husbands, and have lots of nice European white babies, because we're under this existential global conspiracy theory that is trying to eliminate white people from basically their, quote, God-inherited homelands. Again, this is nonsense, of course, and is fundamentally rooted in long-standing, virulent, racist, both themes, made-up scientific, quote, research that goes back hundreds of years, trying to defend, frankly, the enslavement of peoples and the stripping of rights from peoples. We saw versions of this in the 1930s in Germany. It has been around in iterations for a long time. Why, given that you study violent extremism, why study this thing that's basically supposed to be like a cuckoo conspiracy theory relegated to the fringes of the dark web and podcast spaces? Why study this if it's just a theory?
It's a theory that has inspired numerous acts of, horrific mass violence, terrorism, to be, pretty blunt about it. The first one that was probably very explicitly inspired by it was the attack in 2011 in Norway, where Anders Breivik killed 77 people because he thought his government was complicit in the replacement of white Europeans with an increasingly Islamicized, quote unquote, Europe. And he believed in an offshoot of the Great Replacement Theory called Eurabia, whereby European nations have this secret pact with Arab nations in exchange for oil. Europeans let in more Arabs and Muslims into the continent. So that was the first one. And Anders Breivik went on to inspire at least five or six other very prominent attacks. Just a few of them happened here in the U.S. There was Dylann Roof. There was Patrick Crusius. There was Peyton Gendron. And probably most famously was the attack in New Zealand in March 2019 by Brenton Tarrant. So it has a legacy of violence.
It's interesting, that attack in New Zealand, if I'm remembering my political history correctly, led to some of the world's most restrictive gun laws. The president that oversaw those gun laws and that reform effort in New Zealand lost the office, but they've seen basically a ceasing of any kind of mass violence that would fall under this rubric of violent extremism and terrorism in their country since those laws were adopted. Similar happened in Australia around that same time. Are we seeing violent extremism that is being motivated by the Great Replacement Theory and its rhetorical progeny here in the United States? Is this a problem here at home?
It is. It's not to the point where we have lone actors going out and shooting up Walmarts. Not so much anymore. That possibility and that threat is still absolutely there. And it exists, and I see it pretty much every day on Telegram, Discord, and all these other places where white supremacists and neo-Nazis like to gather away from the sunlight. But more so, you kind of see it in government policy. You see it with heavy-handed immigration laws, with this goal of deporting 1 million people a year, and overwhelmingly, those people that are targeted are what we would consider, you know, non-white. They're Hispanics. They speak a different language. They come from different parts of the world. They have a culture that is supposedly clashing with America's, according to, you know, the border czar, according to Stephen Miller, and all these other people within the administration that have this, frankly, insane goal of deporting a million people a year. And that's all inspired by that.
I'm sorry. I wanted to ask a quick question. Do you consider the Tree of Life mass shooting? Do you consider the Walmart shooting in Texas to be either directly or indirectly in part inspired by some of this Great Replacement Theory rhetoric that seems to now basically dominate and define the MAGAverse?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. If you look at Tree of Life, the shooter believed that one of the organizations or the charities that was housed or associated with that synagogue was purposely assisting immigrants coming into the U.S. for that purpose of replacing white people. Mm.
So we do see this here, and you know, Tucker Carlson, Charlie Kirk, they explicitly sort of promoted this concept in various pieces, bits, and forms. I believe Tucker Carlson has actually called it out by name in his work, both in podcast and on broadcast. Let's take a couple of callers briefly. Ollie, say hello to Luke. What's your question or comment? Ollie, you there? What's your question or comment? We'll go back to Ollie. Cam, what's your question or comment for Luke and I?
Hey guys, I was wondering how much overlap is there between sites like 4chan and Discord and Telegram and any of the other chans with any of these conspiracy theories? Like, are they typically the primary source? And then second, I was wondering how much overlap do you see in here with the shooters and Inseldom and these political extremists, if that overlaps hard?
Let's save that question because I want to define what 4chan, 8chan, Discord, Telegram, and Incel, all of these things, and how they sort of come together in this place where violent extremism, foments, marinates,
manifests.
It's a scary corner of the dark interwebs. We'll talk about it more with our special guest this hour, Luke Baumgartner, and each and every one of you, and what we can do about it next, right here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Join us, 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842.
You're listening to Civic Media, Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Go back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. It is the first day of our Go for the Green and Gold Text to Win multi-state contest. You text in the word I'm about to give you via the Civic Media app, which is free wherever you get your apps from, and you'll be entered to win one of our daily prizes of $200, our gold jewelry, and you'll be entered to win our grand prize, a pair of club-level indoor seats to the Green Bay versus Minnesota game on November 23rd. The word to win today, to get entered to win, is wide, WIDE. Let's get back to this great discussion we were having with my guest this hour, Luke Baumgartner. He is a research fellow at the Program on Extremism at George Washington University. Luke, I'm going to ask my senior producer to book you back right again because people want to talk about this. It's so important. The program that you work at GW is nonpartisan, apolitical. That's the goal here. Right before the break, Cam from Appleton asked us a question about the places where a lot of violent extremism sort of gets started and catalyzes, and people can say awful things. And it's these platforms like Telegram, Discord, 4chan, 8chan. I know there are others. What are these things, and why do violent extremists gravitate there?
So when we talk about some of these platforms, the ones that you just mentioned come to mind. So starting with the chans, those are, you know, image boards and message boards where people can post anonymously, and they have different, subs or threads or, you know, discussion topics that anybody can really contribute to from anywhere. And it's a place that really manifested a lot of just sort of out there virulent racist anti-Semitic content that has inspired, you know, quite a few mass shooters, terrorists and neo-Nazis the world over.
Are they there because these platforms are basically unmoderated, or they don't enforce policies that would otherwise remove this kind of content?
So they are pretty much just the Wild West of the internet when it comes to message boards. When they first started, they had moderators and admins and all that sort of thing. The need for these free speech zones on the internet sort of increased, entrepreneurs came along and decided to one up one another with the chans and, messaging platforms, to basically turn it into a free for all for a lot of people. And they didn't want to, you know, restrict speech of pretty much any kind. The one notable exception with 8chan was no CSAM or child sexual exploitation material. So that was,
but
like,
other
where
platforms
the
don't observe that. These are, I
correct.
Mean, this is yeah. where people will go to access child pornography internationally, mm-hmm. to stream it. It is like the cesspool. It's the darkest corners of the internet.
Yeah.
We'll come back to these and the role that they've played and kind of how they've metastasized the platforms themselves, not just the speech on them, but changed over time. But I wanted to ask you, what is stochastic terrorism? And why is this something that people should be really concerned about?
So within the field of terrorism studies, the word stochastic can be debated about its merits. We won't get into that because we, you know, only have so much airtime. But basically, it's the idea that, you know, one act of violence or terrorism, it begets another, and it inspires, and somebody will look at somebody else's rhetoric or somebody else's actions and decide to do it their own way and take up the mantle.
It is this grand question. It's a technical term that I like to use, but it really speaks of when a speaker with a massive platform engages in speech that demonizes groups, and there's a volume of that, and it's just going out all of the time. What are the statistical odds that someone would hear that and be radicalized and mobilized by that speech, demonizing on a consistent basis a particular group for their individual characteristics, be that race, nationality, political viewpoints, or otherwise? It's an interesting concept. Luke Baumgartner, thank you so much for being with us here. I'd love to have you back as soon as we can get you on and as soon as your schedule bears. There's so much to talk about in this arena. Folks, you've got two last minutes to get in your word to win on the multi-state green and gold text to win contest. Again, that word is wide, WIDE. Get it in before the clock strikes 6 p.m. and we all turn into pumpkins. That's going to do it for Luke and I this afternoon. Sorry if we didn't get to your calls or texts. Thanks to everybody for your incredible participation. It is always a pleasure to be with all of you. Luke, I wanted to end this afternoon by asking you to address this. If folks are listening and they've got friends or family members that they think are being radicalized or being pushed towards extremist views, how can people help their friends or family members that are in that headspace?
I would say listen. Sometimes you don't want to listen to, you know, the potentially racist or radical things that they have to say. But sometimes people just want somebody to lend an ear to them and be a friend. So be that person, and sometimes you might break through to them.
I fail at that all the time, Luke. So thank you for that reminder to do that. And boy, we all need to listen to each other a little bit more. It's okay to correct the facts and check the racism, but to keep people from acting out in violent ways, maybe an open ear is the pathway forward. Thanks again to Luke Baumgartner. Thanks to each and every one of you. We got Pete Schwab coming up next. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me, but it is always better when we stand together peacefully.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.